Nesrick has created his own highly addictive genre of nonfiction, chronicling the stories of young geniuses making tons of money on the steep edge of ethics and morality. Nesrick has authored 13 books, including Bringing Down the House, the inside story of six MIT students who took Vegas for millions, which spent 63 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list and was the basis for the movie 21 with Kevin Spacey. And of course, his book, The Accidental Billionaires, The Founding of Facebook, was adapted into the hit film, The Social Network. And Nesrick does the research, non-traditionally at times. During his research for Bringing Down the House, he taped $250,000 to his body and smuggled it through airport security with some notorious card counters, thus getting an insider look at the Vegas high-rolling lifestyle. Now, in Straight Flush, Nesrick writes the true tale of a group of American college buddies who built a billion-dollar online poker colossus. Based on extensive insider interviews and participation, Straight Flush chronicles the rags-to-riches story of a group of University of Montana frat brothers who turned a weekly poker game in the basement of a local dive bar into AbsolutePoker.com, one of the largest online companies in the world. At its height, Absolute Poker earned more than $1 million a day. Its founders set up operations in Costa Rica and embraced an outrageous lifestyle of girls, parties, and money. But the U.S. Justice Department placed a bullseye on the company. The result is one of the wildest business stories of the past decade. Welcome, Ben. Thanks for stopping by the Book Report.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
How did you get intrigued by Absolute Poker's story?
I got emails from some of the founders. Ever since Bringing Down the House and then after The Social Network, I've become kind of the go-to guy for every college kid who does something crazy. And I got emails from the guys. One of them was a fugitive in Antigua, couldn't set foot off the island. The other one was about to go to jail. And the whole thing intrigued me, how these kids basically launched the online poker world.
So they contacted you?
Yeah, and wow. That's pretty much how all my books have come. I basically just sit at home and wait for people to contact me.
Okay, you got that world, call Ben. All right, well, tell us a little about each of the company's founders.
Sure. I mean, it's a group of fraternity guys from the University of Montana. They were all frat brothers, and they used to play poker in the basement of a local bar. I mean, these were poor kids. Most of them were from hard backgrounds. One of them had sold a cow to buy his first car. So they didn't really come from money. And they play poker, and they basically realized that, you know, if they could get it online and make this into sort of an internet company, a lot of money could be made. So this was kind of the dawn of the internet and internet commerce, and there was only one other poker site at the time, something called Paradise Poker, and it was very rudimentary. So they basically had this idea to do it, and so they moved their fraternity to Costa Rica. And so it ended up being a very wild place to be because it was pretty much lawless. But that's where they launched their company and built it from there.
What year was that, actually?
Well, they got the idea around 1999, and then around 2002 is when they ended up in Costa Rica.
All right. Can you tell us a little about each of the guys?
Yeah. I mean, the main guy, his name is Scott Tom, and he was a complex character, like I said, the way to describe it. He grew up in a very hard situation, kind of in a trailer. His mother was into drugs and things like that, and he ended up at the University of Montana and sort of rebuilding himself there. There was Garen, his buddy, who was kind of the jock of the group. Brent, his younger stepbrother or half-brother, who was kind of the naive kid, who ended up, you know, following Scott out to Costa Rica. And Pete Barovich, who was the president of the fraternity and more of sort of the marketing genius behind it. And there was Shane, who was a cool guy who ended up having a lot of problems with drugs and ended up having to go to rehab in the middle of the story. But those are kind of the main characters, I would say. And then Hilt. And Hilt was a rich kid from a rich family in Florida who brought in a lot of the money for them in the beginning.
Hmm. How many of these guys did you actually interview for the book?
All of them. Huh. So everybody involved in the book was part of the research process.
How long did you research the story?
I would say 6 or 7 months. I had to go to Antigua a lot. One of the characters would meet me in Toronto because it was the closest to the United States. He was willing to go. The kid, Brent, who ended up going to jail, he's in prison right now. I was able to get to him before he went into prison. So I would say 6 or 7 months altogether of research.
You know, when I read the book, I'm not sure I liked these guys very much. But when you met them and spoke with them, were they likable?
Well, I mean, they're complex. You know, they're not the geeks I wrote about for Bring It Down the House. You know, they're not these MIT geniuses, and they're not even sort of the Facebook type guys. These guys were kind of hard partying jocks, you know, who in Costa Rica, it was a very wild place for them. There was a lot of craziness. So whether they're likable or not, I mean, people are going to have different opinions on them. A lot of people hate Scott Tom. I mean, he's raised a lot of anger in the poker community over the years. I got along with them, but, you know, I get along with everybody. So it's hard for me to judge people that way.
All right. Okay. Well, talk about the Unlawful Internet Gambling and Enforcement Act.
Sure. So when these guys started the company, whether or not online poker is legal or not was something no one could really answer. You know, if you ask 10 lawyers, 5 would give one answer and 5 would give another. In 2006, two senators passed a bill by attaching it to a port terrorism bill. So it was basically snuck through. And it basically made online poker much more gray area and in some states illegal. And the bill basically said that the movement of money from a player to a company involved in something that was illegal gambling would be money laundering and fraud. So it essentially made the movement of money into a poker company illegal if any state in the country had laws on the books that made that company's business illegal. So online poker became illegal in a bunch of states with that bill. And most poker companies fled the business then. They just fled the American market and just stayed in Europe. These guys, after the poker, stayed in the American market, and they basically were now in a dangerous place.
Yeah. You know, as you say in the book, if betting in Vegas is legal, if buying a lottery ticket is fine, why is online poker illegal?
Well, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's very, it's hypocrisy. The idea that we all lined up for Powerball tickets a few weeks ago, and yet online poker is illegal, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, poker is a game of skill more than it's a game of chance. Most people agree with that. It doesn't really make any sense. It's just that it was the only thing they could go after at the time. The other thing is that the government wasn't getting money from it because it wasn't regulated, it wasn't taxed. And I think that will change. I think online poker will now become illegal over the next few years, and the government will get its piece of it. But there really is no reason to that law. If it were a regulated industry, it wouldn't be this shady thing where people would be losing their money, there wouldn't be all this cheating. I think it would be a much better situation. But, you know, that's for the future, I guess.
Well, your story begins with one of the group, Brent Beckley, and do you think he took the fall for the other guys?
He absolutely did so far. I mean, he turned himself in. He was, you know, he's a nice kid. He's a naive guy. His name was on everything because he was running sort of the banking side of it. He was running the account, so his name was on all the payment processors. So he was definitely going to get in trouble. When he turned himself in, he did it because he had two young kids. He wanted them to come to America. He wanted to get out of Costa Rica. And he thought he wasn't going to get any jail time, but the judge threw the book at him and gave him 14 months in a federal prison. So he really did take the fall, although Scott is still in Antigua, refuses to give himself up. So he is facing a very large indictment. So, you know, eventually, if he doesn't make some sort of a deal, he will end up in jail as well.
So what about the other guys? Where are they now?
They're kind of spread out. You know, a couple of them won't come to the United States because they're afraid of getting arrested or subpoenaed. Two of them actually now have moved back to the U.S. and haven't had any trouble yet. It's very tricky. You know, nobody really understands the law. I don't think even the Department of Justice's own lawyers really understand what's going on with online poker and online gaming. So it's still, you know, an interesting and developing story.
You know, these guys were millionaires. It's hard to kind of understand why they didn't lawyer up with the best of the best and beat these charges.
Well, they did. I mean, they spent millions on lawyers. But eventually, you know, it became a standoff. The state of New York and the Department of Justice were making deals, but they wanted huge amounts of money. Poker Stars paid a $751 million fine. The Absolute Poker guys don't have that kind of money. So they were unable to make a deal. So it's basically, you know, a situation where their lawyers are attempting to negotiate a way for Scott to sort of give himself up and not do jail time. But with Brent, it ended up not working out. He ended up in jail.
So when Brent gets out of jail, is he going to be broke or is he going to be pretty set?
Well, he said he's broke. He had to pay $1 million fine. He didn't have the lion's share of the money because he was an underling in the story. He wasn't in charge. He wasn't making the big money. He's learning how to cook in prison. classes, and he figures he can get work at a restaurant because that's one of the areas where, having a record doesn't necessarily hurt your skills. So I don't know what he'll end up doing, but yeah, he's not going to be set up for life or anything like that.
Huh. So what's your next project?
I'm working on a bunch of projects. I just sold a big movie, franchise-type picture to 20th Century Fox with Brett Ratner attached to produce. And it's a Da Vinci Code meets, National Treasure type of thriller series about the seven wonders of the world. And then I'm also working on a big new nonfiction book, which is sort of a secret project still. Oh. And I have a children's book coming out next summer as well.
Oh, that's very cool.
I think Straight Flush sort of is a mix of 21 and The Social Network, which is why I was kind of turned on to the story. And so I think if people enjoyed those projects, they'll probably like Straight Flush.
Well, I know I enjoyed it. Thanks a lot for coming on the show today.
No problem. Thanks very much.
Bye.